If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard, the U.S.
Commander Benjamin Sisko, Federation Starbase, Deep Space Nine.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, Deep Space Nine. It's a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
Adam, it's been a long time since we've whipped out the cards and declared war on one another.
And this would be the first time on the DS9 version of the show, right?
Yeah, I mean, are we even allowed to keep playing this game?
Do they make cards for DS9? They probably don't, right? This is all TNG-specific stuff.
I've seen trading cards for DS9, but I don't know if there's a card game.
I think it says a lot about how people view DS9 when it doesn't even have a collectible card game, Ben.
Man, sad. Before we get into the game... now that we've planted that that's what we're going to do, they've probably sold a bunch by now, given the fact that some other shows on the network sold out within the first instance of being on sale. But our priority one messages were not on sale for a little while because we sold out for the rest of 2017. And as of this recording, the first half of 2018... Priority One messages are available. So if you have a thing that you want a P1 for in the first 6 months of 2018, now's your chance.
Yeah, for that you can go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. Let's get into a card war, Ben.
We're at war.
There's been no formal declaration of war.
Maybe this trick will bring us some luck.
That nonsense is centuries behind us.
War! Go to war!
Once again, we are playing Star Trek Collectible Card Game War, in which Ben and I both draw a single card for three rounds of action, and then we decide, quite subjectively, whose card in each round reigns supreme.
Do you think we've picked up listeners that were like, I don't want to listen to this show because it's about TNG, but now that it's about DS9, I'm in.
Probably, and now we're turning them back off.
Yeah. All right, you ready to flip?
Yeah, let's do it.
3, 2, 1.
Ben, I have event. Events tend to be the more powerful cards
sure.
in this game that we play. It's the event where no one has gone before, wherein the traveler transcends space and thought. He took the USS Enterprise to Galaxy M33, then to an even greater... extragalactic distance. Anything having to do with the Traveler seems to be fairly powerful. I'll just say that. It remains to be seen what card you have and whether or not it'll be more powerful.
The card I have is Portal Guard. Portal 63 is the last remaining protector of the Takan Empire, which went extinct 600,000 years ago. Challenges those who awaken him. I think this is the They Call Me Tim guy from the first Ferengis episode with Anybody Canyon.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that guy.
Yeah, that guy.
The guy who just seemed kind of super bored with the whole thing.
Yeah. I don't think this guy wound up being much of a dilemma.
I don't think so either.
Kind of think... I think I think you edged me out on this one, Adam.
All right, I'll take it. 1-0. Ready to flip the second card?
Yeah.
3, 2, 1.
I have Romulan Officer Talus, the Romulan representative of those serving in the Romulan Star Empire, with integrity of 3, cunning of 7, and strength of 7.
That's a great card, Ben, but I'm not sure it beats Dukath, the Klingon trained in the field of science. who studied the effects of Berthold rays on plant life, and he served aboard the Pach. This is the second Pach crewman I've gotten while playing this war game with you.
Yeah.
The first famously being Vecma, the girl whose advances were spurred by Riker in the cafeteria.
At least as far as was depicted in the episode.
Right. There may have been a luncheon that we were not privy to. All right, I think I'm going to give that one to you, Ben.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think so.
I think that's generous.
Is it really? Like, no one even knows Dukath. Like, I'm seeing a picture of the guy. He's a science officer on a Klingon ship. How worthless is that?
All right. This guy actually knew Rom Jarlin, which has got to be good for something.
That's what I'm saying. He was close to the...
What are his stats?
Oh, you know what? We occasionally do defer to stats for this decision. I've got integrity 5, cunning 6, strength 7.
I think numerically you're one up on me.
Oh, jeez. All right. I'll take it. I mean, here's the thing. Like, when the numbers... Like, the numbers should tell the truth.
Yeah.
And I think we have to have the numbers be the first point of ranking between cards, and then
if
falls
both cards
on us
have
to
the numbers,
subjectively judge on our own.
Yeah. All right. Ready to flip our last card?
Yes.
All right. 3, 2, 1. Speaking of Vecma, that's who I've got.
What?
Yeah. Integrity 6, cunning 5, strength 6.
It's less fun when we get repeats.
Yeah.
I have interrupt near warp transport. It's a physically disconcerting transport at high speed.
Yeah, I thought I was in that wall over there.
Yeah. It disconcerts your opponents by transporting them at high speed.
Well, my sense, Adam, is that you've beaten me by 2-1.
Oh, yeah? You're going to stick Vecma above near warp transport?
Fuck yeah.
Yeah, I think Vecma is more disconcerting than near warp transport. I think we're in agreement there.
All right, Adam, should we get into the episode we came here to talk about today?
Do we have to? This is one of those episodes that, as I was watching it, I had all the comments in the back of my head that I read about doing Deep Space Nine for the purposes of our show, which was like, boy, those first couple of seasons are quite a drag. We'll see if we can make some comedy hay out of Deep Space Nine Season 1, Episode 4, Babel.
Do you realize how incredible this is? No, of course you don't.
It's Episode 4 of a brand new series, and I feel like the writers of Deep Space Nine looked back on Season 1 of Next Gen and they were like, can we make the Naked Now in Deep Space Nine only make it somehow less fun?
Yeah, there definitely seems to be like a series of moves that they have for early seasons. And this is definitely one of them. So maybe as we talk this through, we'll find the drunk Shimoda of the series. Because the Naked Now, in many ways, is the episode that keeps on giving.
It's true. It gives and gives, pumping comedy into every episode that we make.
This episode starts close up on an airlock alien who is banging on the glass, and O'Brien is explaining to him that...
Save your energy. We'll have you out of there as soon as possible.
Like, listen, dude, you're not getting a speaking part. Just mouth it incoherently. Maybe it's a different language. Maybe it's just... You know, we
just
can't hear you through the
fog
glass.
Fog the glass and then write the words in the fog with your finger.
We're not paying you as a featured character. You're an extra. But yeah, like this this kicks off like a montage of sequences with O'Brien attempting to fix things on the station. The station is still in a state of disrepair, and O'Brien's days are all about just fielding angry harangues from different people on the staff and people visiting the station who have things going wrong, and it's, you know, he's just got a list of things he needs to fix.
It seems like there may be 6 Federation people serving on the station, and O'Brien seems to have a fairly heavy lift as far as all the responsibilities that he has. I see him struggling. He's getting a ton of guff from all comers. He needs some help.
He does. In that first scene, he's got like a couple of lackeys, you know, with their sleeves rolled up, working on this airlock door problem.
Right.
And they seem, you know, like exactly what he needs in the entire rest of the episode. He's definitely spends a lot of time like solo fixing very critical systems.
He's really like the Peter Principle incarnate, because he was really good at transporter room, and now he got a promotion to space station handyman, and he is barely hanging on.
Yeah, he walked into the station and said, no water?
This place is a dump.
There was no star wipe to hunky dudes in banana hammocks lounging by the promenade.
People seem to be putting up with the idea of things not working station-wide, up to the point where replicators stop working, or stop working in a way that is acceptable.
Yeah, I love, there's a lot of, like, taking a sip of coffee out of a super 90s commuter mug, and then spitting it out on the floor.
That's what I'm saying, Ben, like, for as many spit-take-worthy scenes... Does anyone ever spit into the air in this episode? It should happen 4 times.
It should. I wonder what misreplicated coffee tastes like. Does it taste like gasoline, or does it taste just like bad coffee? Like what are they experiencing here? Is it like the free coffee in your room if you stay at a Motel 6, or is it something like very dangerous because it's just throwing random molecules together in a glass?
It just tastes like Sanka.
Sanka brand's 100% real coffee without too much caffeine.
Is it the lack of good coffee that is more aggravating to him, or is it that he has to fix every goddamn thing on the station?
Yeah, well, it's like, it's kind of both, I think.
Yeah.
Like, he gives my wife a run for her money in the number of times he rolls his eyes in this, in this cold open.
O'Brien gets put on replicator detail, and he manages to fix a couple of them, but not all of them. Cork's replicator is still pretty fucked up, and the customers are not happy with the flavor of their soup.
I'm not gonna eat that shit.
The last one he fixed, I guess, is in ops, and like when he gets it replicating well, the camera eerily pans through the guts of the machine and finds a little device with tubes plugged into the system. And that's our smash to title sequence. So we know that there's going to be something amiss with the replicators, but when we come back from title sequence, like Odo
and Mr. Bunkin
has to stop someone from murdering Quark with soup. Cause those customers, as you said, are very upset.
Can you recall the last time you went to a restaurant and got an upsettingly bad meal wherein you had to, like, have a conversation with a server or a manager?
We went to a Thai restaurant over by the Americana at Brand recently.
God, there you go. Just giving them more and more free press, Ben.
I was joking with my wife as we were leaving the other day, like, we make fun of this place and think that there's some things about it that are very lame, and yet we're here, like, more often than once a week, so.
Yeah.
So who's the joke really on?
That's the shortest distance between you and Xiaolong Bao, man.
Yeah. Well, we wanted Thai food this night, and we stopped in, and, like, it wasn't that the food was bad, it was that they it's maybe a 10 table establishment. We were one of two tables that was occupied. We ordered three dishes and there were mistakes or differences in all three of them. Like, you know, like we ordered steamed tofu on our pad CU and it came out as fried tofu.
Oh.
It was like, you know, like it was like a series of things like that. And even that, even all three dishes coming out incorrect, I did not really make a comment about.
Was the French guy at the other table like, you call this Penang curry? This is an atrocity.
This is, you do not put peanut and potato in the same dish. I mean, this is a fun scene in Quark's bar because Quark is sitting there talking to Odo, who is, you know, who's kind of making fun of Quark for having very few customers in, and they're kind of re-establishing their mutual antipathy. But then Odo has to come in, like, step in and pull the nasty soup spoon out of Quark's mouth and tell the guy to take a hike.
It kind of sucks to be Quark, because not only do you have to go to work every day and, like, serve a thankless lunchroom full of people, but you got this Odo guy just hanging all over your ass, like, every shift. Like, just basically making fun of you to your face for your entire shift.
Yeah.
That sucks.
Yeah, Odo is kind of a bully.
It serves to help me really like Quark and feel for him and identify for him in a way that I think without Odo as the foil, I don't know if you get there with him.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, like without the salt of Odo, it would not bring out the sweet of Quark.
You could say it that way.
He's like pretzels crumbled up and sprinkled over your ice cream, you know?
Right.
Like incongruous, but yet it makes it even more delicious.
Quark kind of looks like a pretzel.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
This is becoming a speech.
You're the captain, sir. You're entitled.
Not entitled to ramble on about something everyone knows.
Odo lets slip that O'Brien's repair rounds have resulted in the replicators in ops being A-OK, while the replicators in Quark's bar are messed up and not working properly. So Quark uses some illegal-seeming technology to crack the computer and find out which replicators are up and running. And thus begins the caper.
This moment really raised my eyebrows, Ben, because it would appear that Quark has command-level computer access.
Yes.
What? What? Yeah. And Odo is, like, on him, like, stink on shit, and has not figured this out, and will not figure this out. What in the hell?
Yeah.
Good on Quark for, like, having a stack of Cardassian isolinear chips at the ready, like, ready to reprogram his computer with.
I admire his tenacity.
He's great and resourceful.
We get a kind of interesting scene in here where Kira and Dax are wandering around on the promenade, and Dax is, like, having a moment, like a little, like, I'm in a new body moment, where all of the dudes on the promenade are turning and staring at her, and she's like, oh yeah, I forgot about this. Forget about being a lady. I have been a dude for 80 years, and now people want to look at my boobs.
It has just been a weird couple of weeks to watch stories about women in the workplace, Ben.
Yeah. Of course, we're not allowed to get on our social justice warrior tip on this anymore, Adam.
That's right.
Got a very, very angry email from somebody who canceled their monthly support of our show because I expressed what he called white guilt.
Oh, boy. Congratulations, guy.
Yeah. Yeah. You've really taken a stand for, I guess, white supremacy?
Here's to being on the side of not showing any empathy at all, ever.
Like, I think that their two perspectives on this are interesting, because Kira is, like, not a fan, you know? But she is she is going to live one life as a woman, whereas Dax is an ankylosaur, and she is going to have other opportunities to not be a woman, and so she gets to, like, just enjoy the difference of it without this being a permanent aspect of her reality, you know?
This is a thing that, like, Buddhists meditate on a bunch, like the impermanence of all things and how you can get through trying times by just considering the impermanence of what's happening. And the idea that that could be translated somehow into a, like, super long lifetime way of thinking about it is really cool to me.
Yeah, she's just like, listen, Kira, they're going to look at your boobs, but what you got to remember is all is Brahman. That's the dumbest joke of all time. They show up at Quark's bar. Quark is like, hey, come in here. It's not creepy at all, I swear.
Perhaps I could interest you in a nice double whipped a Danny and spice pudding.
And Kira's like, fuck you, Quark, I'm out of here. And then Dax is like, I'm game, let's do it. As Kira heads back up to Ops, she runs into the chief, and she's like checking in with him about how his impossibly long list of repairs is going. And he just starts kind of saying nonsense to her, like,
Major Lark's true pepper.
What?
English words that don't string together to form coherent thoughts.
Shout easy play.
Chief, you're not making any sense.
O'Brien was on the Enterprise during Naked Now, but I can't remember a scene where he was present. Do you?
Yeah, he's in episode one. Like, I think he's on that battle bridge when Riker has to put the pieces back together.
Do you think every time he gets a fever, he thinks it's going to be like a sexy fever? Like, it's weird how there was never any... Well, like, it's not weird because in the context of Next Generation, nothing lasts longer than the episode that it takes place in. But right. Like, henceforth, you would think any sort of fever or sweat would would make you think that you're about to fuck.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the other weird omission from this episode is that we never see Keiko or Molly. And right. I feel like if the chief is like patient zero and sick and getting sicker, it's surprising that the implications of that for his family are never explored.
I felt the same way, especially because as the story goes on and more people succumb to the virus, the one relationship you get is Jake and Sisko.
Yeah. Like, which is good.
But O'Brien's relationship to his wife and kid are in many ways like more pronounced in the series up to now.
Yeah. A weird choice, a weird way they took this.
Maybe Keiko's asking for that John Lithgow money.
That's a whole different podcast, Adam. You're making callbacks that like half of these people aren't even going to get.
I'm cutting our 2% in half.
But O'Brien's like subjected to a battery of tests by the doctor and is pronounced aphasic, which means that there's something interrupting the process whereby he applies words and names to objects and things. And
his actual thinking hasn't been affected, but he's incapable of expressing himself or understanding others.
He can't even write them messages. Like, he writes out a message on an iPad at one point, and it itself is a bunch of nonsense. And
the terrifying part of this description to me, Ben, wasn't so much the babbling, the incoherence of the person, but that they also could not understand other people speaking at them.
Yeah.
And that's a part of it that is not really shown in this episode. Like, the terror of someone talking to you and not understanding them, you don't see that half of it. And I thought that was a missed opportunity.
It's especially weird that they, like, there's one POV shot in this episode later on in the ep where the doctor is like reading a screen of results from his experiments to try and fix this, and it cuts to a screen that has a bunch of nonsense words on it, and it's the doctor's POV of that screen.
Yeah.
It's like a very, very rare POV shot in Trek and a rare POV shot in the only POV shot in this episode. And it is like not the POV shot I would have burned my one on, you know?
I was really distracted by this shot mostly because it looks like the operating system on DS9 was designed by the same guy who made the original Oregon Trail video game.
Yeah, I was thinking that it's the same font as the original iPod.
Yeah. It looks really bad.
Yeah, the upgrade to HD I feel like would be less kind to this show than it was to TNG, because on this show they're actually like using contemporary to when they shot it computer monitors hidden behind the glass panels. And TNG, they didn't even bother with that. It was all like printed film behind those glass panels.
Yeah, it would be a much greater challenge.
So they got a mystery on their hands. Like, what is this disease? It seems like more and more people are coming down with it, and they got to figure out where it's coming from and why people are getting it. And so they put a quarantine on the station. They tell all the businesses that they have to shut down. Quark conveniently ignores this, I guess. And yeah, it's a crisis. Like the commander puts everybody on a list of tasks to try and solve the problem. Like Bashir is on come up with an antidote duty. Kira is on a track down what O'Brien was working on and see if you can't figure out where his path crossed with this virus. And he like turns to Dax and he's about to give Dax a job, and she starts being aphasic like as she's responding.
Foolish assembled regal controlled weather.
She gets that look on her face like that lady on Airplane who keeps popping eggs out of her mouth. That's a very specific kind of facial acting.
Like, she seems to be aware that she's not making sense before anybody says something back to her. But I think she's reacting to the expressions on their faces.
Yeah, that's a great point. Like, when you're aphasic, do you know that you're aphasic when you're talking? Or do you think that you're making sense?
Like, I was wondering that in the couple of scenes in this episode where somebody, like, mid-sentence starts saying crazy shit. And I think both times they are looking at somebody who lets horror wash over their face as the change takes place. So
there's a little bit of persuasiveness too in like when someone is suffering from the aphasia, they'll start speaking and then they'll repeat something in a persuasive manner that would seem to indicate that they understand what they're saying and they don't understand why no one else can.
Right. Well, despite everything being shut down on the station, Quark's bar is going great, and this causes Odo to be highly suspicious.
This quarantine has everybody on edge, Constable. Would you deprive them of a little harmless diversion?
And I guess he catches Quark like replicating shit in an unoccupied crew quarters, which I guess their replicators are on the same system as the ops deck.
He does this by turning himself into a beverage cart.
Yeah.
Which is so great.
Yeah.
Like, he can't make a nose and ears, but he can make four casters.
Yeah. If I had the ability to change myself into something, beverage cart would be high on my list. Not long after this is when Jake comes down with the disease, which really kind of ratchets up the tension, and like people are dropping like flies, but this is what causes him to kick into high gear and start kind of kicking down doors to get this dealt with.
Ben Sisko tries to hug it out of him as is his way.
Yeah.
I don't remember ever being touched as much as a teenager. This is an ongoing problem for me when I see Jake and Ben interact, like as a father and son. Like
that there are lots of physical expressions of affection in their relationship.
Yeah. I think it really lays bare just how little of that I got growing up. This is very therapeutic to talk this out with you, Ben.
Yeah, I was kind of I had that available to me, but I was dispositionally not given to it. Like to this day, like if my wife like we call it nurking. If she does like a light touch, I get like the willies and I'll like, you know, move her hand.
Oh, really?
Away. Yeah. Yeah. Oh. Not a fan.
Nurking?
Yeah.
Is that a real thing or is that a name you came up with?
I didn't come up with it. Somebody else did. But
wow.
Yeah, it's just like anytime a loved one puts a hand on that is not like any appreciable amount of pressure, you know?
You like a hard touch. That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah. I want you to go for it or not go at all.
When you get a massage, you're asking for elbows and knees.
I don't get any massages at them.
Can't have that.
Don't like them.
They're always trying to nerk you, huh?
Yeah. I'm like, what? I'm paying you for this? Give me a break. So this virus is like, it's not just boggle, but for your mouth. It's also killing people, right? Like they go to the emergency ward that they've set up, and it's not just people sitting around saying crazy nonsense. They're like lying down on cots and they're sick and sweaty, and the chief is in really bad shape. He's like, he is laid out unconscious. The doctor thinks maybe he has 12 hours to live.
O'Brien, just before he goes into his coma, is like, is everyone in this room about to fuck? Ben, one of the people I noticed in this room is Anne Gillespie, playing one of the nurses here. Anne Gillespie famously played Steve Sanders' mom in Beverly Hills 90210.
Oh.
One of those that ladies.
Yeah.
From film and television. She's great.
Well, stay tuned, because I have more things to say about her.
Uh-oh.
Spoiler alert. They come up with the idea that this virus, like Kira finds the tube that or the device that is pumping the virus into the replicators, and she's like, this is a fucking Cardassian thing. It's got a Cardassian battery in it. It says so right here on the label. Cardassians sabotaged the station before they left. This is proof. And then it is kind of worked out that this is probably in fact a Bajoran resistance plot, and this doctor from the Bajoran resistance, Deacon Ellig, is probably the devious mind that created this, and they like left this on the station, or it was like built into the station by like Bajoran slave labor with the idea that they would trigger it and kill all the Cardassians living aboard. But the people that were running the operation all got captured or killed before they could trigger the virus. So Deacon Ellig died in prison, but he had a lackey at him, and his lackey was named Cermak Wren.
I feel like when you're taking over a Cardassian station, you got to check all the vents and wiring and stuff. This is like the previous occupants of a foreclosed on home, like putting a fish in the furnace.
Yeah.
Well, like, how did they not check all this?
I totally was thinking about that. Like, I sold an iMac to a friend of mine a few years ago. Like, it was an older computer of mine, and I was upgrading, and I sold him my old computer. And I, you know, like, I went through it and tried to, like, un-me it a little bit, like, you know, wipe the operating system and, you know.
You backed up your prodigious collection of pornography?
Right.
All your nurking porn?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's
because it turns out, Ben, you're attracted to the thing that that you don't want in real life.
Yeah, things that are repulsive wind up having a place in my erotic imagination. Two girls, one light stroke. But like, it still shows up on like Find My iPhone. Like, if I do Find My iPhone, there's always like an iMac in Red Hook, Brooklyn that shows up on that. And I'm like, no, that's not my computer anymore. And like, I can't get them to turn that off. Like nobody at tech support has any way of deactivating that. And like, I don't know. Like, he installed iTunes at one point and it downloaded a bunch of music of mine. So it's sort of like it, like that problem, but compounded. Like they have an entire space station that's probably got iTunes accounts and GP, you know, LoJack systems. Like just installing Federation computers on this has got to be a huge risk because it's probably feeding information back up to the Cardassian cloud.
Do you think Nurk Goetze is like just two hands lightly touching two buns and that's it?
Yeah. It's also the title of this episode. So Kira gets on FaceTime with Cermak Wren and she's like, "Hey buddy, this is Kira Nerys just calling from Deep Space Nine. You know that virus you guys installed on the station? Well, it got out, and we're just wondering if you knew anything about how to get rid of it." And he's like,
"I have no idea what you're talking about."
And he hangs up on her, and she gets special dispensation to leave the station, leave the quarantine zone.
Ben, at what point do you hit whatever button it is that is general distress call? Because they never think to do that, and the plan to send Kira in a runabout seems like their last hope, because Sisko needs to be talked into it. Sisko's like, no one's leaving this station. Like what? You can't spread this thing to the planet surface. And Kira promises him, like, she's not getting out of the shuttle. Odo is like, let her go, man. She's our last best shot. Someone's got to communicate with the Federation at this point, right?
Yeah. They are in Starfleet, which implies that there's more than one other spaceship in it.
It feels like Sisko is willing to die, like just entombed space station style.
Yeah. Well, what he's doing is he's thinking about, like, man, I've been on the job for like 4 weeks now. I mean, like, it has not gone great. Like, there have been Cardassians attacking. There's been Klingons trying to sell weapons to Bajorans. Like, I need this not to register on Starfleet's Richter scale. They need to not know that this week was also a catastrophe.
When a solution is so obvious, or like a course of action, a possible course of action is so obvious and not taken, what I wanted is to have it be associated with a character trait or flaw somehow. Like, maybe Sisko doesn't like asking for help in any circumstance, and so the idea of calling the cavalry would be embarrassing to him.
Like, it's anathema to his
character. Yeah, like even a little throwaway moment of like, you know, I just got this command. I can't be asking for help, you know, 3 weeks after being stationed here. We got to fix this thing ourselves. Like,
or even we just blew in a call to Starfleet Medical, but the closest ship is 36 hours away and they're headed here at high warp, but O'Brien's got 12 hours to go.
Yeah, I've got to believe that in an early draft of the script, something like that was in it. It seems so glaring that call for help wouldn't be here.
Kira gets Wren aboard the runabout, and he's like, "Let me go. I don't want to be here." And she's like, "Well,
I've been infected with your virus, doctor. So now you're infected too.
So you better get to making with the antidote." And like by the time she gets back to the station, it's like the skeletonist of skeleton crews, because Sisko has gone aphasic. And it seems like Quark and Odo are the only two people in the entire station that aren't super sick. Like, I guess the implication is not that Ferengis are immune. Like, it makes sense that Odo is immune. It doesn't make any sense that Quark is just doing peachy. He was like the main vector for most people to get this disease.
Odo seems really unclear about what Quark may or may not be capable of.
Yeah.
Like, with respect to the station and its operation, but because he's sort of the last guy standing, he has no other choice.
It's strange to see Odo place trust in Quark, and it's strange to see that trust, like, totally validated. Like, Quark does not take undue advantage of the situation. He, like, winds up being pretty heroic here.
Buried in the deep, deep, deep B story is the captain of a trade ship that was depicted in the very first scene with O'Brien. as a guy with a timeline who's just got to get the fuck out, he's got he's got perishable goods on his ship, and he's got to take them to his delivery spot before they spoil. And so he has gotten back onto his ship, and he's trying to rip his way off of it. Like, there's docking clamps holding the ship to the outer ring, and what he's doing is, like, sort of flooring the gas.
Yeah.
While the parking brake is on, and he's just making a smoke show outside of DS9. And he's really in danger of blowing up not only his ship, but like a good portion of the station in doing this. And so yes. They got to figure a way to unhook the docking clamps from the ship before everyone gets killed.
Odo heads down there, like all of the doors on the airlock are open, and the ship on the far side is fully engulfed in flames. And Odo, like, saves the captain and then, like, slams the doors shut and does the manual docking clamp release. And the ship is ejected away from the station. And there's a pretty, like, exciting model sequence where it, like, flings away and explodes off the docking.
Yeah, I like that sequence a lot. Like, the sense of speed from the ship firing away from the station was really cool.
It was really cool, and it was like, oh man, like, this is a different level of budget. Like, I feel like in TNG season one, this would have been described by Data, like reading something off of a sensor panel.
Yeah. What happens as this is happening is the guy that Kira brought on board has, using Bashir's notes, figured out a way to cure the virus.
It's very, like, elliptical about everybody being back to normal. It's like a commander's log, and there's just kind of like a slide whistle in, which is the commander, like, you know, slaps Chief O'Brien on the back and says, "Good to have you back, buddy," and heads over to replicate himself some coffee. And
O'Brien,
once again, replicates bad tasting coffee.
This Roscoe P. Coltrane ending this show was so tonally off. Like, how are we supposed to take anything that happened before this seriously if this is the end?
And the episode had so much great tone stuff, like the terror of people, like, getting sick, like, in the presence of their coworkers and stuff was very well played and very very frightening. And then yeah, it's so goofy the way they wrap it up. The last beat of the episode didn't need to be silly. They could have just gone with something else.
Yeah.
They could have gone with like O'Brien tearfully reuniting with his family.
Why is illness only depicted in Star Trek as sweating and feverish? Like, I can't remember ever seeing anyone throw up in Star Trek. Have you?
Yeah. I guess because they don't ever show what the bathroom looks like.
Right. Man, that is so weird to think that a set determines what illnesses are possible on your show.
Yeah. It would have been fun if they were just all, like, The Exorcist-style projectile vomiting the entire time.
I would have loved that so much.
Kira, you gotta get back here. The entire promenade is very slippery.
Odo, get down there with 40 pounds of cat litter. Can Odo turn himself into cat litter?
I'm glad you're back, Kira. This is not a job that I signed up for.
Is that is the most indignant job, right? The guy who turns himself into cat litter to clean up vomit. Did you ever work the job that a 15, 16-year-old has, like I had, working in a grocery store? You're bagging groceries, but you're also cleaning up messes. I was cat litter guy once. That sucks. But tell you what's lower on the rung of duties than that is becoming cat litter. I am become cat litter, destroyer of vomit.
When you had to clean up vomit with cat litter, did you go down to the cat litter aisle and get some cat litter, or was there, like, a supply of vomit cat litter?
Ben, you'd be surprised at what you're allowed to do of your own agency when there's vomit on the floor of a grocery store. You're basically given carte blanche to get what you need and get it done.
If you need to go get a few Wagyu steaks out of the cooler and throw those down on the vomit just to make it seem less appalling, go for it.
I was getting rags and Old Spice. Wrapping them around my face. Well, Ben, did you like this episode?
I think it's kind of a solid C. Like, it's not really the show showing what it is, what its like upper possibilities are. It's not totally terrible though, and there are some fun ideas and sequences in it. I like the character moment of Kira just taking that guy against his will and then like revealing to him that he is exposed to the illness. Like,
right.
Like that, that really sets a tone for what she is all about. And in an interesting way, I like some of the special effects in the episode, but, overall it's not really one of my faves.
It's weird to think that you need stakes higher than death, but I feel like I wanted some higher stakes than what we got. Like the disability to speak or understand to me felt like it needed to be the counterpoint to some need to do so mission wise, you know, like if it just felt like something was missing from the episode to heighten those stakes even more. I don't know.
I feel like if you're making up a space virus, you really like the sky is really the limit on what it does. So,
yeah, and this seems like less imaginative than I would hope. Like if you and I were spitballing what a space virus would do on the edge of space, and the virus could do anything,
and it could even come from another part of even further weirder space,
I gotta believe that you and I would come up with something way grosser. And I think that's what I wanted. Like this
just
is
cause everybody
benign,
to
right?
Nurk each other all the time. Gross.
That's super gross nerk virus. Well, one thing that makes me feel a little creeped out every time is the reading of some Priority One messages, Ben. You want to see if we have any of those?
Let us see.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental. Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Adam, our first Priority One message is from Lieutenant Commander Oliver of the USS Caligari, and it is for Plavim, most divine and great leader. It goes like this. Though I have been a loyal follower, your latest message has cut me deeply. In your zeal, you lumped me in with those malcontent and scoundrel rascals. You forsook me. And I see that I now have no choice but to wear the shameful, lowly mantle of a rascal. It is with much sorrow that I must say, go fuck yourself, Plavim. May May Commander Graves forgive me.
I really expected him to say Plavim's was the superior intellect, but not the case. Not the case because it clearly isn't true. Strong work from Team Rascals.
Man, Team Rascals growing by the day. Plavim really painting himself into a corner. You gotta go with the surgical strikes, Plavim. You can't just shoot blunderbuss everywhere.
Ben, our second Priority One message is from a really cool dude, aka this person, aka Neil Timmons, aka Lord Timmons, 5-time holder of the WCT belt. It is for Ben and Adam, but not Ben Hosp, because fuck that guy. And to Sykes, yes, I have your challenge coin. Message goes like this. Thank you for 2 super fun shows in Philly and DC. Ben Hosp gets bitter beer face when with Lord Timmons and the belt. Will Kevin tag in to hit Ben Hosp from the top rope? Like a renegade Hoosnock. Texas Chainsaw Masters is November 9th through 12th. Ben Hosp, your fate awaits. Shout out to the Trek CC site. Keep up the great work. Ben, I remember this guy.
This really feels like a, like it's in Darmok language, but like on a whole nother level.
This guy, Lord Timmons, I remember sitting fairly close to the stage during the DC show.
Oh, quite, was he in
quite
regalia?
Disruptive. Oh yeah, he was. He had a wrestling belt. Either he was incredibly drunk, or a friend of his was.
Yeah,
and it was a little bit of a scene, as I remember.
I think it was a friend of his.
Yeah, I think they brought a guy who had never seen our show before and decided to self-defense drink. Yow.
Oh man, I hope that guy's hangover is almost over.
I don't think I would survive drinking that much. But whatever gets you through one of our famously fun Greatest Gen live shows.
Well, if you would like to procure a Priority One message, you can go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. It's $100 for a personal message and $200 for a commercial message. And I guess the way we're doing it going forward is that they'll be sold in kind of like six-month chunks. And if you go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron and you don't see the Greatest Generation available for sale, you can just shoot an email to drunkshimoda@gmail.com and we should be able to give you a date for when they will go on sale. And thank you to all of the viewers who have gotten Priority One messages. It's amazing how popular this program has been, and we appreciate it.
It's a big deal to be able to depend on them for the production of the show. So thanks.
Hey, Adam.
What's that, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Drunk Shimoda!
This one was easy for me, Ben. This is an easy mark. At the very end, things are coming to a crescendo. Odo is fucking around with the docking clamps, flipping switches and pulling levers and sending the ship away. Cork, meanwhile, up on the command level, is going crazy from the stress. So stressed out that as the ship explodes, he sort of cross handholds his own head.
Yeah, he kind of Madonna Vogue's his head.
Yeah, like he reaches over the top of his head, grabs one ear, and then grabs the opposite side of his face with his other hand and grabs the other ear. It's a coping thing I've never seen a Ferengi do. But I'd like to know more about whether or not it's like canonical Ferengi coping mechanism, because it was sort of a tight close-up on his face, and that whole cross-handed head grab was bizarre. So to me, like, he's my Shimoda. What a weird move. How about you, Ben?
Good Shimoda, Adam. My Shimoda is the Bajoran nurse that we talked about earlier. Anne Gillespie portrayed her. There's just a fun scene where they go down to the sick ward where everybody in there has aphasia but her.
Right.
And every single person that she interacts with, she like acts confused that they don't understand her and she doesn't understand them. Like it happens like three times in rapid succession where somebody will come up to her and be like, you know, doorknob, bouncy ball, rug, hat. And she goes, what? Huh? Huh? What? I'm sorry, I don't understand you. You have to go lie down now.
As they say, doctors prescribe, nurses provide. Anne Gillespie does a terrible job here as Nurse Jabara. Not a great nurse, not a great mom to Steve Sanders. A little bit of a typecast here.
You think it's something that's wrong with Anne Gillespie?
No.
I think it's something that is wrong with the script that Anne Gillespie was asked to portray.
That's the truth, yeah. Much love to Anne Gillespie.
Darmok, Angelad, and Tanagra.
Mother's Day is coming up, and one of the best gifts you can give a mom that you might share a bed with is doing some yard work downstairs, if you know what I mean, with Manscaped.
This season, make sure you groom your carpets and your drapes with a leader in below-the-waist grooming. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants to let the mother of your children know how much you appreciate her continuing to put up with you. Are you looking for the perfect gift to celebrate the moms in your life? Aura Frames are beautiful Wi-Fi connected digital picture frames that allow you to share and display unlimited photos. Every mom I have ever given an Aura Frame to has absolutely loved it. And that includes a lot of moms I know. This is a gift that I have personally given many, many times. And it's great. I can upload photos from my phone the moment I take them. And that means that mom or grandma out there is going to get pictures of their loved ones delivered to their living room. And right now, Aura is having a great sale for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting auraframes.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's auraframes.com and use the code SCARVES at checkout to show your support for our show. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Ben, what do we have coming up on the next episode?
Next episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine is Season 1, Episode 5, Captive Pursuit. O'Brien befriends the prey in another worldly hunting game. Can he and the rest of the officers save the being from a life in captivity? Sounds like a real alien versus predator type situation.
You know, every science fiction show needs the most dangerous game episode.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it sounds like that's what we got coming up.
That is what it sounds like, Adam. We've had some conversations, you and I, about what we should do in lieu of vetoes, because I've seen Deep Space Nine all the way through. I think you've probably seen it, seen most of the episodes. But I don't think either of us remembers it as strongly as we do TNG. So it would be disingenuous
to... It's like I have an aphasia with respect to Deep Space Nine, Ben. How little I remember of it.
You look at the episodes, but they make no sense to you.
Right.
One thing that has been suggested is some mechanic whereby we get drunk. And I really like that. And I'm wondering if we can build some sort of way we can hold this over each other's heads.
Well, I love the idea of getting drunk for episodes. I don't really view it as a punishment or a weapon that we can wield at each other, because like if I cursed you, if I smote you with getting drunk, I would want to get drunk with you. So yeah. Like, the idea would be that we would both drink for the episode. So,
what if it's just a random thing? If we put it into a random number generator and we find out whether or not we are getting drunk for an episode, and we have a
like we have the number of chances of episodes in that season.
I love that idea. The randomization makes it sound like a landmine, like a drunk landmine, and I'm all for it.
Okay, I'm going to a random number generator website. So how many episodes are there in season one of this show? So, Adam, there are 19 total episodes in season one of this series, and we've already watched four of them, so we've got to back those out. So we need a random number between 1 and 15, and I'm going to generate that number now and see if our next episode is the one for which we tie one on.
So wait a second. Like, by rolling one, would that make the next episode the drinking episode?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. And I'm rolling. I literally got one.
What?
I'm not kidding. I'm gonna send you a screenshot of this right now.
No fucking way. Wow.
I just sent you proof.
That is bonkers. Yeah, message is authentic. We have a screenshot of a one on the random number generator. Holy shit.
Well, I think that the crazy thing about this is we'll generate random numbers until the end of this season, and it could happen for any episode.
Oh, no.
It could happen multiple times a season.
I like that, actually. I like the constant threat. Keeps it interesting.
Sure does.
Oh, shit. That is bonkers. Well, let's come up with something to drink between now and the next episode, and we'll leave our viewers in suspense.
Okay.
Our viewers don't have to wait to comment about the show or any of the stupid things we've said. They're welcome to go on Twitter using the hashtag GreatestGen. I'm on there as @CufferTime. Ben is there as @BenjaminR, AHR.
If you'd like to comment about the show directly to us, you can send an email to drunkshimoda@gmail.com. And if you'd like to help us promote the show, go to Apple Podcasts and leave a nice review, or leave a nice review of the show wherever you think people might see it. It's like word of mouth is the way these things get out there and grow, and we've been very lucky so far with that, and we really appreciate everybody that that helped get the word out about our program.
Yeah, I mean, growing the listenership is pretty critical to the survival of the show, so to the degree we can do that, it really is a big help.
If you'd like to join a group and talk even more, you can go to Reddit. There's a Greatest Gen subreddit, and there's a great Maximum Fun subreddit. There's also a Greatest Gen Facebook group, and there's even a Facebook group for The Greatest Discovery, our sister podcast.
Yeah, I would definitely invite you to check that out if you're watching Star Trek Discovery.
We should thank Dark Materia for our theme music and Adam Ragusa, who is slowly taking over our theme music piece by piece.
It's my job now, Ben.
I know.
And with that, we'll see you next time for another great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine and an episode of The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine that's hunted for sport while drunk.
It makes it more interesting.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.